Our book critic Maureen Carrigan figures you may be looking for some good books to read this summer, so she's put together her suggestions. She made some of her recommendations last week. Now she has more, including some new novels, a book of gardening essays, and a biography that describes the greatest literary beach parties of the century.
Any reader who's ever become fascinated with the literature and lives of the Lost Generation has stumbled across the names Gerald and Sarah Murphy. The Murphys were a wealthy couple who were the friends and patrons of F. Scott Fitzgerald, Ernest Hemingway, John Dos Passos, Archibald MacLeish, Dorothy Parker, Pablo Picasso, Cole Porter, and in short, just about everybody who was anybody in the 1920s. I'd always had this dim impression of the Murphys as artistic parasites, sleek fat cats who fed off others' wit and talent. But in Amanda Vale's shimmering new biography of the Murphys and their circle, called Everybody Was So Young, it's the artists who come out looking like parasites. Vale's account is full of gossipy anecdotes about ingrates like Hemingway, Fitzgerald, and other class acts who pocketed the Murphys' money, basked in their encouragement, and then gratuitously maligned them in books like A Movable Feast and Tender Is the Night. In addition to their boundless tolerance of their famous friend's bad behavior, Vale makes it clear that the Murphys deserve to be celebrated in their own right for single-handedly bringing to perfection the concept of summer vacation. The most delightful chapters of Everybody Was So Young are those devoted to the mid-1920s, when the Murphys bought a sprawling villa on a then-sleepy backwater called the French Riviera. In this villa, which they whimsically decorated with stainless steel furniture and vases filled with parsley, they hosted their mooching artist pals to a stay in paradise. A typical early afternoon would find the Murphys and their friends at the beach, swimming in the clear salt water, chatting, nibbling hors d'oeuvres, and drinking dry sherry. After lunch, a siesta, and a late afternoon excursion, everyone would enjoy dinner by candlelight out in their fragrant garden. Late in life, Archibald MacLeish recalled the atmosphere the Murphys created. There was a shine to life wherever they were, he said, not a decorative added value, but a kind of revelation of inherent loveliness. Reading about these magical summer sojourns at Shea Murphy has curdled the anticipation I once felt for my usual week in August at the Jersey Shore. But Vale's captivating biography is well worth a dampened vacation. The Murphys had a full staff of garden gnomes to attend to their flowers and vegetables, but if you're one of those nature lovers who relish the feel of topsoil under your fingernails, you'll appreciate Alan Lacey's gorgeous book, The Inviting Garden. For years, Lacey was the garden columnist for the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times. He's also a professor of philosophy, which explains why his thoughts here leap from observations on the lowly guinea hen flower to ruminations about how a garden offers a retreat from the world, yet paradoxically, how in one small garden on a midsummer day, the entire world is to be found. I fled in horror from my one attempt at gardening after I dug up my first trowel full of worms. But Lacey's thoughtful essays, accompanied by photographer Cynthia Woodyard's luscious pictures, give even a nature phobe like me much of the pleasure of gardening without any of the mess. Gerald and Sarah Murphy were such keen-eyed spotters of talent that if they were still around these days, they'd surely be inviting novelists Richard Powers and Rose Tremain to those Riviera beach parties. Powers, who's received the MacArthur Award, among other prizes, has just published Gain, an ambitious, engrossing novel about capitalism and its casualties that oscillates back and forth between two narratives. One chronicles the growth of the Clare Soap Company from the early 19th century to the present. The other focuses on the life of Laura Bodley, a resident of the Illinois town where Clare's agricultural operations are headquartered. When Laura discovers she has ovarian cancer, her future becomes intertwined with the company's in a fight for survival. In contrast to Gaines' historical sweep, The Way I Found Her, Rose Tremain's eighth novel, is a small jewel of a story. One summer, a 13-year-old British boy named Louis Little accompanies his mother to Paris, where she's been hired to translate the latest novel by an eccentric, best-selling Russian author named Valentina Gavrilovich. Lewis falls under Valentina's erotic spell, while an existentialist roofer falls for Lewis's mother. There's a kidnapping here, as well as other agreeable plot complications, but it's Lewis's adolescent narrative voice, at once wry and smart-alecky and melancholy, that makes The Way I Found Her so memorable. For instance, describing the way Valentina laughs, Lewis says, "Hers was the kind of laugh you imagine women having long ago, before they realized they were an oppressed category of people." I'm not even sure if I should like that description as much as I do, but I know the kind of laugh Lewis is talking about, and it echoes throughout the pages of this odd and lovely novel. The Murphys may have perfected the concept of summer vacation, but the books I've just mentioned come pretty close to perfecting the experience of summer reading.
Maureen Carrigan teaches literature at Georgetown University.